What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are in Arya 8, A Storm of Swords, and we hope that you had a wonderful new year. Happy 2025. Matt, what do you got any resolutions?
Whew, that's a good question, man. Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously I should lose a little bit of weight, try and save some money. I don't know, sort of the typical normal New Year's resolutions. Get fucking hype for Dunkin' Egg because we know it's coming out later. In this,
I saw some clips of it.
I saw that IMDb, it was like the fifth highest, most anticipated show of this year.
Really? Okay, I didn't expect that, to be honest, but I did see some clips of it, and I'm trying to remember where I saw it. I think it was on a commercial when I was watching New Year's Eve. Watching the Anderson Cooper show because it's absurd every year and I love it. And they were showing commercials for HBO Max because you could watch it on HBO Max. And they had a couple Dunkin' Egg clips in there. And one of them was in the part of the forest that I was in Ireland back when I visited in September. And I literally was oh my God, that's the place. Like, that's where I sat. You know, that was pretty cool. So the footage looked really good. It looked very good. It actually almost had a different tint than House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones. It seemed a little bit more muted, which I thought was interesting. I'm curious how it'll look whenever they get to the, obviously, the joust, right? Like, I don't know exactly. Right. Well, I shouldn't say joust, but, you know, the tourney. We'll see how much the colors pop there. But I don't know. I mean, the 5 seconds total that I saw, and I think it had a lot of dialogue, looked pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a different... I think... It's a weird kind of weird way to kind of describe it. I feel like it has an opportunity to be maybe more like The Last of Us, right? A similar type thing where it's obviously a different universe, but it's still like a two-person story set in its own universe and things like that. I kind of hope HBO, you know, markets it, you know, like this is going to be a little bit different. So people aren't going in expecting dragons. I mean, there are no dragons in it. So like, you know, this is the time when the dragons are dead. They'll probably have a little thumbnail in there, but at the beginning. So I think, you know, they can still lean to the mysticism with Blood Raven and all this stuff. So I think you know, that's a character that's going to be in this show that immediately they can be like, wait, for a lot of, you know, the casual audience, which always, you know, talk about, like, hold on, wasn't that the guy that was in Damon's vision? And then they'll have to go look up and see what the deal is. So
that could be really cool.
I think that'll probably be the way they do some of this mysticism and stuff. And we know we're going to get a dragon dream, like where there's gonna be a prophetic dream, like right out the gate almost. So, you know, it can lean a little bit more into stuff. You can still actually have dragons in these dragon dreams without having, you know, like dragon combat and things like that.
Yeah. And also like the allure. I mean, a lot of the general audience likes dragons. I mean, that's pretty obvious, but a lot of Game of Thrones came down to two people in a room talking. And and I know that season 6, 7, 8 were much different, but 7 and 8 were very different, right, from previous seasons of the show. But it earned its reputation off dialogue and slower scenes. And, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, it pays off. You just got to stick with it. I remember hearing that so much whenever the show was on before.
The dragons weren't even really, the Daenerys' dragons weren't even really doing anything cool until like seasons 4 and 5.
Matt, I remember people actually talking about this in this manner. They would say, isn't that the show with the dragons and the fantasy stuff? And it's like, no, but it's not even really about the dragons. I remember people saying that, you know.
Well,
and you know, which is ironic because now it's like people are like, not enough dragons, 0 to 10. Hate it.
You know, when I remember people explaining to me what Game of Thrones was and what everyone thought was cool was actually the White Walkers. That's what I think to me was, you go back before Daenerys' dragons became like sort of the big deal. It was really like, it was the White Walkers that was the cool part of it.
So many people I knew were all about, they were all about Tyrion.
Yeah.
Which is objectively the correct take, because he's the
best. maybe that's what they'll lean heavy into. Maybe they'll lean more heavy into the backstory of the White Walkers with Bloodraven and some of this mystery behind this. And who knows that Bloodraven isn't the one that influences, even in conversations or whatever, isn't the one influencing Egg to try and do this ceremony. So there's a lot of cool ways you could go. I mean, even if you look at House of the Dragon and you think about all the stuff we thought this show was going to be about, we were not anticipating the dagger and prophecy and all of this.
No,
we weren't. We weren't anticipating Daemon having all of these, like, you know, crazy dreams at Harrenhal and stuff like that. So I trust him. George seems to be very excited about this project. So
yeah, definitely. It's like his safe haven away from Ryan Condell now, I think. I'm just excited for the show. And even if it doesn't have like a lot of the mysticism and stuff and they kind of downplay, I actually don't mind. I think this is going to be a story where like the characters are going to have to land. Like there might be more pressure on the actors for this show than House of the Dragon, because House of the Dragon has a lot of that blockbuster spectacle built into it. Obviously, season two, we didn't get to see the big battle because, well, you know, the budget cuts. But I think Duncan Egg is going to have to be carried by its interpersonal connections and its dialogue and such. So the writing has to be up to snuff for this show to work. And hopefully, like I've told you, you know, I'm optimistic that it's probably going to be a pretty great show. I just don't know if it's the show the general audience is going to want based on the complaints of House of Dragon. But we'll just have to see. Truthfully, I'm just excited to talk about it and to watch it with you. I think it'll be fun. And
it's gonna be
fun. I've always wanted to see Duncan Egg on screen, and here we are.
Same. Pretty cool. I will say, real quick, before we get into the chapter here, I have a bone to pick with HBO. Okay. I don't know if any HBO executive listens, and this isn't influencing any of the A Song of Ice and Fire content that exists, but it might someday. Okay. So I have been in a rewatch of The West Wing on Max, right?
Okay.
So they took the West Wing off Max, which is fine. You know, sometimes shows leave, they get shifted around, they go to another platform. So the platform that it is on now, the West Wing, is on Max. So they took it off Max to put it on Max. Now you're saying, what's your problem with that? That sounds like they just pulled it up and put it back on. No, they didn't. The only way to access it is through Amazon Prime. But it's you have to have a Max subscription through Amazon Prime to watch it. So I have a Prime subscription. I have a Max subscription. I do, however, not have a Max subscription through Amazon Prime in order to watch the show that I'm watching.
That's a real thing.
It is a real thing. And so obviously this is the first time I've experienced it, but that means that you know it's happening with other shows. Where it's like, I'm sure it's like Hulu through Prime and all this other stuff. I mean, that's you know, that there's people that get like duped into that, or, you know, whatever. Like, that is just such the biggest load of
it. Feels BS. Like an MLM almost, right? It's like you're gonna get to the next tier.
It is exactly. It is the biggest load of BS I've ever seen. It is so ridiculous. I mean, it's like a new way to sort of try and get more subscriptions. Because obviously Amazon gets a kickback, HBO gets a kickback, and, you know, again, this isn't affecting Game of Thrones or House of Dragon. Likely, probably never will. You know, I don't think that Max wants to keep like The Sopranos and Game of Thrones and its big shows.
They put Band of Brothers on Netflix. You see that?
There you go.
That blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it will happen eventually. It will happen. You know, it definitely will happen eventually. And but.
Netflix is going to just buy HBO. Watch.
Just a quick little thing that I noticed, and I want to say, because eventually it might. Who knows? If we get maybe a Duncan, or like, you know, we're supposed to get some animated content. Maybe that'll be one of those things that's on a Max subscription through freaking Prime, or who knows? Now they're bundling all this stuff together. Be like, well, do you have Max through Hulu? No. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff, dude, that's streaming exclusive. They don't even make physical copies. Because I was going to say, I've been thinking about getting a lot more into physical media. Like, I have all 8 seasons of Game of Thrones on in that nice, cool box set, that collector set, which is really sick. But a lot of these exclusive shows don't even come out in hard copy anymore.
I know. Best Buy got rid of it. Game of Thrones is one I would love to have on sort of like Blu-ray, but yeah. Now a lot of the streaming you're getting, it can be the Blu-ray quality version.
The point is whether they move it to a point where you can't access it, or they take things out, yeah, or add that. You know, you want the original thing. Right. You know, this is just your other realm, right? Is video games. A lot of people will buy physical video games so they get the day zero game. Like, a lot of people haven't updated some of the Souls games because they patch things to make it easier because people complain. So some people are like, no, I'm still playing like Lies of
Vanilla, like vanilla version. Yeah. That was a big deal with World of Warcraft when they brought back vanilla World of Warcraft. Everyone was on. So I'm super into
it.
I read a thing about this earlier in the summer because Twisters 2 was out and I just happened to come across.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was a fun time, but I think because I had went and seen it, it threw some Twisters content into my algorithm, which is like, you know, the weird, craziest thing to say. And anyway, I came across this guy who on TikTok, who was like a Blu-ray DVD collector. And he was talking about how he's like, what happens sometimes is the coloring. And so in the original Twisters movie, like if you went and saw it in theaters, like the sky was always green because that's like a thing. And then at some point, like the DVD version came out and they switched it to more of like a more, you know, bluish gray sky. And anyway, the point I'm getting to all this is that now they just released another version where it's like, oh, back to the original coloring and stuff like that. That sometimes happens too. You know, I mean, like the only way to see Daenerys's Starbucks cup is, you know, if you had taped it that night. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe that one isn't such a bad thing though. Maybe,
right. You know, they go back and they'll digitally alter stuff and things like that. I think Star Wars is the best example because there's like, you know, tons of threads of like every different version.
Blade Runner is another thing that's been cut up and changed.
Like Star Wars, for example, is the best way to view the highest quality version that exists of the original format before like even George Lucas went back in the late 90s is on Laserdisc. So if you want to watch like the best quality version of Star Wars, like in its original format, you need to get a Laserdisc player.
I bet you that is so expensive.
It's actually not. I looked it up. You can find them for like $100 on.
$100.
Yep. I know. I still want to get it someday. It's actually a really cool set. It's like,
yeah, it looks cool.
There's not a lot of collectibles I like, but we should get to the chat before we just talk about physical media and everything. But hey, go out there and get them because you might not have access to them at some point, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. That's why I'm still a pretty big fan of physical books too. Mm-hmm. Very big fan of physical books. Sometimes you'll get things on Audible or Kindle Unlimited or whatever, and they're included. And then you're like, oh, cool, I'll download that and read it next month. And then you get back and it's gone. You know, you're like, well, where did it go? So yeah. I'm a pretty big fan of having some of these things in physical condition. You know, one thing I actually really would like to have is a physical copy of all the Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire audiobooks, because eventually they're going to replace Roy with a narrator who can pronounce the names. I love Roy Dotrice. I am nostalgic for him, but he is not the best narrator. And many people online are calling for like a new recording, and it's going to happen, you know?
Yeah. I wonder, that's interesting because I have the audiobooks and I can look into this at a later time. I have the audiobooks of Wheel of Time, and I know that they got Rosamund Pike to go through, and she's so I wonder if I go click on it, what I have, because I know sometimes on Audible it's like you buy whatever narrator it is and then you have to buy it again with somebody
else. They're gonna do that. Yeah, it's gonna be two separate things. Yeah. I guess for me, like, who knows, like maybe they will want people to buy the new one so they take the Roy one down. I don't know, but for me personally, even though whoever they pick will probably be much better than Roy, I still love him because that's how
you know it'd be amazing is what they really should do. I mean, obviously, you have to get way too many actors.
Peter Dinklage like to do it.
So. No, maybe even if they just did it for the first book as like an entryway to it, is to do like a full cast.
Shocking! They never did that, right?
To do it, if you went and got a full cast to read that. I mean, you wouldn't have to have every person, because like I've listened to the Dune audiobook that has like the drama. But even if you had just a couple. You know, like to have, you know, like Sean Bean read like as Eddard Stark, and Kit Harington read as Jon Snow, and Peter Dinklage read as Tyrion, and man, that could be a very, very cool. I think even, I think, you know, if it did extremely well, then you could say, hey, we want to do the rest. But man, I feel like that would be a really cool idea for the first book.
I'm shocked that it hasn't happened because, for instance, Fourth Wing is massive right now by Rebecca Yarros, I believe. Yeah. And she already has a dramatized version with like background sounds and noises. And I'm like, I just can't believe they never did that for Game of Thrones, for one, how successful the book is, but then the show also being huge. The main reason, though, I bet you, is because one, cost too much money to get them all. If you're going to do it, you should have done like season two before it really popped off. But also, I think the shooting schedule for Game of Thrones was absolutely brutal on the cast. Like, sure. I don't know if they would have had time. So that's probably why, or maybe just back then they didn't see it.
They weren't as cool of a thing. It seems like it's now more of a thing.
Oh, it's it's very much a thing. Yeah.
Maybe they could do that for Duncan Egg. I know the audiobooks we have are great, but
Harry Lloyd. Yeah.
But it's also such a small book series that maybe you could do that.
You know what else I could see happening? I was thinking about this, and I don't think it would, if it ever happens, it wouldn't be George that wrote it, but I wonder if they're ever going to do a novelization of
House of the Dragon.
Yeah. Because obviously we have Fire and Blood, but I'm talking about like a full-fledged, like multiple POV. Like I could see that being something that whoever owned Penguin Random, whoever, Harper's, whatever.
Right. You know, I wonder, we'd have to look and see what control he has over the...
I'm not sure, but like I could definitely see them ordering.
Like he may have all the rights of the audiobook and the books, I would have to imagine, because typically the way it works is you get like the TV rights, right? Like I think a great example of this is like Spider-Man, right? Is like okay, well, like Sony owns Spider-Man for everything, you know, like they are the ones that can make Spider-Man video games, Spider-Man TV shows, all this stuff. But like Disney, who now owns Marvel, still owns the right to like Spider-Man comics and things like that. Yeah, it's a whole big deal.
I wouldn't want it. I don't actually want a novelization. I like that it's unreliable as a historical record. Like I think that's what makes the show kind of interesting to watch. But I'm just thinking from a money-making perspective and thinking about, you know, them redoing things and whatever. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened one day, depending on how successful the show is. Who knows? Maybe after season two, maybe it just won't have as big of a splash with season three. But I think it'll recover. I think it'll probably be okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you know what, Jimmy? Let's go ahead and let's dive into today's chapter, which is Arya 8 of A Storm of Swords. This is sort of the Ghost of Highheart chapter. Mm-hmm. And that, you know what? It is the Ghost of Highheart chapter. I say sort of a lot. That's a New Year's resolution. I need to stop
saying that.
Sort of. I'm like, this is sort of, it's just a thing I say, and I want to break that habit this year.
So many things I hate about the way I speak.
I say it's sort of this. No, it is this. It is the Ghost of Highheart chat. It is not the sort of Ghost of
Highheart. Yeah, don't be so beta, Matt.
God. All right.
Speak with some authority, dude.
Here we go. Gendry mentions that Maester Mott considered Thoros a false priest, and Thoros agrees. He was sent to the Seven Kingdoms, bring the word of R'hllor, but he spent his time eating and whoring. King Robert was fond of him. I wonder why. And many enjoyed the sight of his flaming sword and melees. Lord Beric silences Thoros by saying, "Fire consumes. It consumes, and when it is done, there is nothing left. Nothing." The outlaws reach Highheart again, and the ancient dwarf woman calls Beric the Lord of Corpses, for the stink of his graves is fresh on him. The Ghost of Highheart tells them her dreams. The Kraken King is dead, and Lord Hoster too. The goat sits alone in the Hall of Kings in a fever as the great dog descends on him. She dreamt of drums and pipes and screams making a great clangor, and of a maid at a feast with purple serpents in her hair, venom dripping from their fangs. And later, I dreamt that maid again, saying a savage giant in a castle built of snow. Suddenly, she spots Arya and calls her Bloodchild and Darkheart, bidding her to leave. When Beric explains to the old dwarf woman that Arya is being brought to Riverrun, she tells them to seek her mother at the twins, for there is to be a wedding. She then demands a song as payment for her dreams. The same song she always requests from Tom, Jenny of Oldstones. Later, Arya speaks with Edric Dane, who is called Ned, like her father. Edric tells her that he saw her father during the Hand's Tourney while he squired for Lord Beric. He reveals that Beric was promised to his aunt, but that before he died, Arya thinks to her, That was before he died, Arya thinks to herself. Ned tells her of Wyla, his wet nurse, who is, he says, is the mother of Jon Snow. She has been in the service of the Danes for years, and Ned is surprised that Arya's father never spoke of her nor of Ashara, Ned's aunt. He tells Arya that her father and Ashara fell in love during the tourney at Harrenhal, and that she killed herself after the war because her heart was broken. Arya does not believe the young Lord of Starfall, believing her father only loved her mother. She asks Harwin about it, and he confirms that Eddard and Ashara may have fallen in love at Harrenhal, but at that time, his brother Brandon was betrothed to Catelyn. He claims that Ashara killed herself, over grief of her brother, and tells Arya, "Let it lie, my lady. They're dead, all of them." When the outlaws come upon a ruined village, Arya thinks the Lannisters destroyed it, but she is told that the village was destroyed years before by Hoster Tully, because Lord Goodbrook, the lord of the village, had fought for the Targaryens during Robert's Rebellion. Later, Thoros sees in his flames that River Run will soon come under attack by the Lannisters again, and he believes the ghost dreams that Catelyn and Robb are at the Twins. That night, Arya sneaks off while everyone else is asleep, feeling that their outlaws cannot be her pack if they want to ransom her off to her brother, mother, or Uncle Benjen. However, she is captured by the Hound while racing through the woods.
What a chapter, dude.
What a chapter. Yeah, there's an absolute ton to break down here. So I think really there's really kind of two things we should talk about. One, I think we can start with the Ghost of High Heart and the prophecies, and then do Arya and Ned, which we kind of talked a little bit about last time we did. We were talking about Ned Dane and things like that, and we've talked, you know, a bunch about it before as well. And then really, yeah, the third part of this chapter too, you know, you can kind of talk about, well, she's getting captured by the Hound, you're heading towards the Red Wedding, which is something we've been seeing coming for a whole lot. Absolute jam-packed chapter here. But I think, Jimmy, let's start with the Ghost of High Heart and the prophecies.
Yeah, so this actually has one of my favorite ones that we feel like has already been confirmed, which is the slaying of a savage giant in a castle built of snow. And it's talking about the maid. So a maid at a feast with purple serpents in her hair, venom dripping from their fangs. And later I dreamt that maid again, slaying a savage giant in a castle built of snow. And this is so there's another allusion, I believe. Beyond this, I think there's one more vision. I might be wrong about a giant being slayed in a castle of snow later on in the series. I think maybe a Dance of Dragons. I might be wrong, so people can correct me if I am. But this is supposedly confirmed, and I believe a Dance of Dragons, where Sansa is building a castle in the snow, and Sweet Robin comes through and kicks it all.
Correct.
Now, the weird part about this is if this is Sansa. So a maid at a feast, which we know Joffrey's wedding, right? With purple serpents in her hair. So what do you think the symbolism of the purple serpents? I'm thinking, like, for me, I'm almost thinking the sand snakes, but that's not probably it, right? Because they're not at the wedding. But venom dripping from their fangs. What do you make of that piece of it?
Well, I think it's supposed to be the poison, right? The poison.
Is it just poison?
It's the poison that's given to Joffrey, which is why it's called the Purple Wedding. But it's hidden in her hairpiece, you know.
And that's why people call it
the Purple Wedding.
I guess I was thinking of snakes dripping from the hair, but I guess that could just be a symbolism of poison, right? Like it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to embody somebody. That's what I was thinking of. Like, who is this living in Sansa's hair? But I guess it doesn't need to go that far. But dreamt of that maid again, slaying a savage giant in a castle built of snow. So if this indeed is Sweet Robin plowing through the snow castle, and this is one of those examples where George gives us foreshadowing or prophecy, and sometimes it's fulfilled in the most random, almost inconsequential ways, right? Now, in that moment, it's very big to Sansa. She's just looking at the spoiled brat stomping through this thing that was giving her comfort. So is it that, or is there something a little bit more here? Because it says that the maid slays the savage giant. Now, in the scene, she corrects Robin and everything. I think that there's a little bit of an altercation there. But like, is this maybe foreshadowing that Sansa might kill Sweet Robin later down the road? Like, could that happen?
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
I don't think, but maybe.
I don't think that's going to happen now.
I think that that's probably not a literal slay, right? I don't think. But how cool is that, though, for this to be fulfilled through the snow castle she builds being ran through by Sweet? I just think that that's so clever of George.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's another one of these things where we look at these prophecies. When you look at the people who are, I think, are sort of like the big prophecy givers, right? Mira Mazdar to Daenerys, Quaithe to Daenerys, the Ghost of Highheart to Arya, and then you have Patchface as well, and then Melisandre. I think those are sort of those are the big people who give prophecies. So here she's already given some things that have happened that really she would really have no other way of knowing. I dreamt I saw a shadow with a burning heart butchering a golden stag. Okay, that is Renly being killed by Stannis. I dreamt of a man without a face waiting on a bridge that swayed and swung. Now that we haven't seen happen yet.
But we think we know what it is, right?
It's going to be
the Young's dad dying from a faceless man assassination, probably paid for by Euron with the dragon eggs or whatever else.
Right. On his shoulder perched a drowned crow with seaweed hanging from its wings. Now, I've always viewed that as interesting because on his shoulder perched a drowned crow with seaweed hanging from its wings. Because in a way, it kind of makes it seem like Euron is the one that's doing it. But it also says it's a faceless man. And then I guess you could look at it and say, well, it's the crow is sitting on him, as in the crow is the one paying for it.
Yes, that's how I take it. The one
that's watching it. Right. Mm-hmm. She goes on to say, I dreamt of a roaring river and the woman that is a fish. Dead she drifted with red tears on her cheeks. Now, this is from the previous one. This isn't in this chapter, by the way. Mm-hmm. I dreamt of a roaring river and a woman that was a fish. Dead she drifted with red tears on her cheeks. When her eyes did open, oh, I woke from terror. All this I dreamt and more. So that's her first prophecy, right?
Lady Stoneheart.
Exactly. That part hasn't happened yet. Now, here in Arya 8, when she's giving her next one, I dreamt of a wolf howling in the rain, but no one heard its grief. I dreamt such a clangor, I thought my head might burst, and drums and horns and pipes and screams. This is all the Red Wedding, but the saddest sound was the little bells. I dreamt of a maid and a feast with purple serpents in her hair. So the purple serpents actually refers to the Strangler, which is the poison, right? The Strangler is a rare poison that looks like dark purple crystals, much like black amethyst, and makes the victim unable to breathe. The process of making the poison is known to the alchemists of Lys, the faceless men of Braavos, and the maesters of the Citadel. The maesters do not discuss subject beyond the confines of their order. The Ashai have one name for the plant from which the poison is made, and the alchemists of Lys have another for the name for the crystals, but the maesters call the poison the Strangler. Interesting, by the way, that the people in the Citadel know how to do it, and Oberyn is somebody who uses poison when he fights against the Mountain. Is it just because he's rich and influencing to do it, or is it because there's somebody at the Citadel who is the riddle? The Sphinx is the riddle.
Man, oh man.
I'm just saying. Okay.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Continue.
I love anything tied to the Citadel. Like anything at all, I love.
Yeah, continuing on here. And later I dreamt that maid again, slaying a savage giant in a castle built of snow. So this could tie into something else as well.
It could.
Right? Because in the show, Sansa is really the one who is responsible for Ramsay's death. Right? Mm-hmm. You could maybe argue that if it goes the exact same way it's going to go, but we know it's not because she doesn't get married to Ramsay like in the show. Right. So we would have to imagine that it's the same maid. Right. And you can't even use that to say, well, it's a fake Sansa, because it's not in the books. It's a fake Arya. Right. With Jane Poole.
So it's
not the same thing. She could still be the one to kill Ramsay and take Winterfell back. And then you could view Winterfell as that castle built of snow. And later I jumped that maid again, slaying a savage giant. Maybe it's referring to somebody who has risen to power as a savage giant. I know we look at the castle quite literally built of snow, but I think you could also make an argument, if you want to try to view this from a different angle or a different lens, that Winterfell itself could be a castle built of snow.
Yeah, well, and I think that season 8 tried to pay a little bit of homage to this with Lyanna Mormont killing the other's giant. Remember that?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that that was their way of like wink, wink. But the reason why I like this being Sansa and Sweet Robin is because it shows that prophecies aren't always right, like word for word, obviously. But it also doesn't have to be this big thing. It can be the small, subtle thing, which at the time is massive for Sansa's character. But right, it's not big as in shaping the world, right?
Right. Exactly.
Or maybe it is. Maybe it's a butterfly effect, right? Like that. Maybe that's that moment is going to trigger Sansa to change and to start looking at things differently and whatever else. Because she does have a very visceral reaction to it. So I don't know. I hope that that is the fulfillment of that prophecy, because I think it makes us have to be a little bit more cautious about our interpretations and theories. I think that it's like a really sly play on prophecy. So I kind of hope that that's the answer to it. Because all these other ones are huge. Like they're massive, right? Like they all tie into something big. So for one of it to be a little bit smaller scale, I think it's kind of a nice balance to strike.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, then we can talk a little about her too. So those are the prophecies she sees. And we know, you know, this is a lot of hinting at the Red Wedding. I mean, the themes, mm-hmm, if you're reading this, are all over the place. You go back to Beric Dondarrion, or not Beric Dondarrion, Ramsay or Roose Bolton, excuse me.
Yeah.
Talking. And we know that, you know, the Red Wedding is coming there. We can see some oddities there, right? I thought he was Jon Snow's bannerman. Well, maybe not so mm-hmm much anymore. We've gotten hints and hints about it. You can look at the townspeople and things. And that's honestly what Arya serves as throughout much of this book.
Yeah.
Really, you could actually make the argument that Arya's role outside of perhaps being, you know, the super assassin character who's going to go on to, you know, kill the Night King or whoever, or Euron in the books, or whatever her prophetic role is, one of the roles that Arya plays to the reader is that she is actually more so than maybe everyone but say Tyrion, is that Arya is a voice for the small folk in these books.
Yeah.
Because she is the one that's traveling throughout this ravaged war land, and we're not viewing the voices of the people around her as like generals or commanders, mm-hmm, or leaders of houses like you get in the chapters with Stannis or the chapters with Catelyn and Jon Snow or any of these other people or anybody at King's Landing, really outside of Tyrion, just because Tyrion interacts with a lot of small people as he's like, you know, walking around town and making the rounds. But so that is really Arya's role in the books. And so you get the small little things talking about the movement of troops.
Yeah.
But it's not, it doesn't have the
military aspect, like,
yeah, it doesn't have the context of, well, I'm trying to defeat these troops.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, yeah. Oh, you just, it's all hearsay stuff.
Yeah, it's, it, you're right, because they're passing through the lands and they're watching the, like, we get to watch the land, and by land, I mean people, react to a civil war. I mean, that's what this is, right? This is a huge civil war in Westeros, and she does provide that view. Also, she represents agency. Right. Like she doesn't have agency in almost any turn, even when she's fighting her hardest and even willing to change her gender at one point to be more of a boy. Right. To have hopefully a better chance at surviving. And she's doing literally everything she can. She even commits her first murders and is still at that moment not really seeing much agency. In fact, the only agency she had was to take her life or not to take a life, which is probably why the House of Black and White ends up calling to her. And then we see her go through that journey. And, you know, I think in power, she's also looking for the ability to make her own decisions. So she's a hugely important character as far as what it's like in this land to not be privileged. Also in this land, what it's like in the common folk to be a female over a male. And we see that transformation back to Arya and back to a lady at some point in this book. I think we've already passed that at this point, but it's striking that Arya is such a popular character, and it's not on accident, I guess. I think George was meaning for this to relate to all of us small folk out there who are reading this, who also have to deal with the decisions of the powers that be and in our daily lives and whatnot. My wife is reading through for the first time. She's in Clash of Kings right now. And she's like, oh my God, I love Arya. Like she loves yeah. Arya chapters. That's all she wants yeah. to do. She just wants to read those. She said Arya and Tyrion are just everything to her. And Daenerys. Those are her top three. She just loves them. She's not as sold on Jon Snow, which I find to be heresy, but she, and she said that. She said that she feels like Arya, it feels like a real representation would be like to live in a pretty hardcore patriarchy at this point in Westeros. And it's also just kind of fun watching her survive, I guess. Maybe not fun's not the word, but it's captivating.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the best things about A Song of Ice and Fire is that you get so many different point of views, and every point of view chapter offers really a different experience in mm-hmm. the narrative. And that's one of the things, you know, why I love going back and doing a reread where I'll just blitz through one character's point of view. And, you know, we've talked at length about there's advantages to that and disadvantages because you don't necessarily get everyone's story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like Bran to me is still one of the most interesting ways to do a POV read, just because his story is sort of self-contained. His story, well, actually, it is sort of self-contained. I will say sort of there. It is actually, you know, sort of self-contained. He does interact with other people from time to time, but for the most part, it is self-contained. He doesn't really do a lot of interacting with other people. Early on, he does. Mm-hmm. You know, Daenerys is another, is one of the best because her story is also self-contained. It has a lot of impact to everyone else, but it's really the only one going on in Essos for most of the story until Arya goes over there. And then she's way over there. You know, I will say it's kind of interesting in the Arya chapters. You don't really hear a lot of talk about Daenerys. You would feel like there'd be way more talk of the townspeople about things that are going on, you know, on the other side of the world. I don't know.
How do they get that information though? I mean, the ravens probably haven't made it there yet. And also a lot of it sounds ridiculous, but a lot of the messenger birds are being used for the Civil War.
Right. Right. I know. Well, I guess I'm just saying when Arya is in Essos, I feel like we don't hear.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant Westeros. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
When Arya is in Essos, I feel like we don't hear in her chapters as much about Daenerys. You'd think that there's like a war on the other, you know, on the other side of, I mean, really, like, I mean, I know it's still like a country or continent, whatever you want to know. Hey, I mean, there's still like some big stuff going on over there, right? I mean,
yeah, maybe there is, and I'm just not remembering. Like, I'd be curious to pay attention to that because I agree. I actually agree. I think there should be at least a couple mentions of it at that point.
So we'll have to pay attention to that when we get there, which will
be a bit. One of the things that you're talking about, Bran, you're talking about Arya and all this stuff. And it strikes me that there are so many different parts of the story that are like coming of age in many ways, like between Jon Snow, even Robb indirectly through Catelyn chapters, Bran, Arya. And the only reason why it's all like a different flavor of coming of age, they're all in very different perspectives different situations. And then we sit in those perspectives and experience it. And it never really gets old for me. I think the only reason why this works, though, is because of how well George formed families in A Game of Thrones and really gave us a sense that these families, even when dysfunctional, have a through line of loyalty or a connection of some sort, even like Tyrion and Cersei. Have moments where they connect and they're like, we're Lannisters. Like we still get those moments. So I think the setup of the family dynamics in book one, which book one's not a short book, but he does it in these characters separate pretty quickly. So it's really impressive what he was able to do. And then on top of that, you almost have coming of age, but then you also have coming of death and you have Ned dying. You have Catelyn going to die and to see what how they see the coming of age from an older perspective, usually not something you get in a fantasy book. Most of the times it's a side character. You don't get like Gandalf, for instance, right? It's like this Frodo coming of age adventure, farm boy off to do this amazing thing. But we never get Gandalf's perspective on how Frodo is changing. We might get some dialogue. We're not in his head. Catelyn, we see every emotion with Rob. Pride. She cringes at some of the things that he does. She disapproves of a lot of what he does. But at all times, it still feels like that's her son. And she puts being a mother above all those things, which is pretty interesting. So I think that like the reason why Arya's POV works and Bran's works and Jon's work and all of them are so strong is because George was able to pick the right people to be in the heads of. He always said he wished he'd done Rob. I actually am okay that he didn't. But also his success in setting up a believable family dynamic in book one goes a long, long way in the series.
Yeah. I agree. Like you said, you know, you talk about being like a coming of age too. Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, everybody goes through that. Like all of the characters, I mean, not necessarily come through age, but everyone makes
they're growing up.
Yeah. They're all growing. Even Jamie, right. I would say to a part, mm-hmm. because Jamie's lit, even though, I mean, some people grow up in their 30s as opposed to their 40s, you know, I mean,
like his life's been pretty easy thus far, right? Like he's just he's Kingslayer. He's a great soldier.
Yeah.
Loves Cersei. Life's easy.
Yeah. I would say, I would agree. And I would say that I don't think anybody does as much as Arya though.
I think Arya, I mean, Bran's pretty huge.
They all do to be fair, but I would say that Arya's is probably the most, if you had to pick one character, I would say Arya, because she's put through more than just about anybody other than maybe
Daenerys is pretty rough at the beginning.
Daenerys and Jon. Yeah. But I would say Arya is still probably the most, because with Arya, we see her interact with so many different types of people. As opposed to, you know, Bran is, it's really, he's there with Osha and then he's there with the Reeds. Yeah. He's there with the Reeds. That's most of his story. John is there with he runs into Mance Rayder and Melisandre and things, but John's also a little bit older and then John dies. So you will have to see how
he's been dead for 10 years.
Yeah. His transformation goes, but Arya just has so many different people that she's interacting with that all mm-hmm. shape her, I think, in one way or another. And it's just, and a little, maybe it's just a little magical. Yeah, they're almost all magical except for the Hound. So it's way more brutal too. Like even Sansa is in a terrible situation, but she's interacting with the Queen and she's interacting with Peter Baelish. Like she's still interacting.
Hers is more psychological.
For sure. Yeah. Whereas Arya is interacting with the Faceless Men and then
Murderers.
The Hound, who's also a pretty brutal guy. Mm. Right. I mean, and even Cyrio Farrell, she's trained by like this master swordsman type, you know, this master swordsman character. So it's all just, I think I would agree. I think Arya's is probably the most.
She's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. She's fantastic.
It's also George's wife's favorite character.
Yeah.
So she's definitely going to make it through the end, just so we all know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Let's continue on here and let's move to the second part here, which is Arya speaking with Edric Dayne. Now we've talked about this, you know, many times before, but I think this time I was thinking a little bit more about it, and it is weird. I still think that his name, he's named after Eddard Stark. And even he has this character. Now, of course he would have grown up and he would have believed whatever was told to him.
Sure.
So for him to have this story makes a lot of sense that Wyla is the mother of Jon Snow. That was also his wet nurse. I think that's pretty easy. But there's a lot of things that just don't make sense in it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
thanks to high heaven, dude.
Right. Because I've looked over this time and time again, and this is how I first came to realize like none of this made sense. Like the problem with Wyla being Jon Snow's mother is the timeline doesn't add up at all. Because when Ned gets back to Winterfell to meet Catelyn, Rob is already born. So how could Ned Stark have impregnated Catelyn Stark, gone and met Wyla, who is likely a servant of Ashara Dane's. And the only scenario that makes sense for him to sleep with Wyla is that he takes the body of Arthur Dane and the sword back to Starfall, in which, you know, he still loves Ashara Dane, and maybe that's where he has the conversation with her. Hey, sorry, I married Catelyn. Here's your dead brother. And then that's when she kills herself. Well, then you'd still need 9 months for Jon Snow to be born. So the timeline doesn't add up.
And here we are. We have confirmed R plus L equals J here.
Right.
Live.
But you know, that's how I began looking at this whole thing when I was like first doing it. Cause I did discover it on my own.
Yeah. You cracked the code before
I cracked the code internet. On my own before I went on the internet,
which is really cool.
Yeah. I love great. That was great. And I was like, the timeline, it just doesn't make sense. There's no way that this could happen. Right. How could Wyla actually be Jon Snow's mother? Ned Stark would have to have her pregnant 9 months earlier. Where is he going to run into her? Unless, I don't think, is the tourney at Harrenhal 9 months before? I think I've looked at this and I don't think that timeline adds up directly.
We'd have to.
Because for Jon Snow to be born at R plus L equals J, there's still enough time because there's like wars that go on. They rage on for a year. Even if Lyanna and Rhaegar met and slept together the night of the tourney at Harrenhal, I don't know that happened. I think it is much more likely he takes her there, or he takes her shortly after the tourney at Harrenhal. So. You know, there's a lot of, you really have to dive deep into that for it to make sense, the timeline.
Yeah. And you know, it was the baby late, was the baby early? I mean, we don't know those things either, right? That and who really knows? But one thing I can tell you for damn certain is that I don't see how Ashara Dane killed herself, but that's just me.
I don't believe she did. No.
Yeah.
Nope. No, I don't believe she did. I think the bigger part of this, I know everyone wants to dive into the theories, especially since, you know, it starts with the Ghost of High Heart and she's making all these prophetic things. And then you dive into Jon Snow and all of these things. But the angle I've never really looked at it is the Arya angle of hearing all of these things. It's kind of like when you're old enough to hear family secrets.
No, it's the worst.
You know, when you're like at Thanksgiving and you start to hear some of the family secrets of, wow, maybe
your Uncle Ronnie used to cheat on Linda all the time. You're like, I don't care.
Right.
I don't want to know that.
Yeah, your mom is actually your aunt, you know. Yeah. What? You know, type of
pass your gravy there, sweetheart.
Yeah, like, you know, it's, we had to hide the pregnancy because she was too young, you know, type
of like, God. Just Appalachian things, right? Like
absolutely. So yeah, I think that was for me this read through my takeaway from it.
Dang. Okay. Mine
just because I've read it so many times that I tried to read it from a different angle.
Yeah, I just have always felt like if we can figure out why the hell they named this kid after Ned, who supposedly killed Arthur Dane, if we can crack that code, I think we pretty much bust this thing wide open. And I'm curious about what exactly will happen with this character. We know that there was a chance that it was supposed to be Darkstar, like what Darkstar ended up being after the 5 year gap. And there being no 5 year gap, that he created a new character named Darkstar, which is what this character was supposed to take the role of. So now people wonder if there's going to be a conflict between Darkstar and old Eddard. I don't know. I'm not sure. Old Ned Dane is a big question mark going forward. But you also have to wonder, like, if something were to be done with this character, who would, like, let's just say like the parentage is something crazy, like how does he find out why he was named the way he was named? That's my question, I guess. Like,
well, yeah, exactly. He's like Eddard, he's Eddard Dane, and then he goes by Ned as well, you know, Ned as well.
It's so like, on that's the nose.
Even more interesting, and it's also the idea that he you know, he's born to like the sister of Ashara Dane, right? And he's too young, and maybe this was I don't know, it's hard to say, but maybe this was actually a mistake by George, or maybe in his mind he had planned this character, we know with the timing up and everything, to be something else, because the timeline of him, unfortunately, doesn't really work out for it to be like actually that situation where maybe he's actually a Shara Dane's son and he's actually like Ned's son, like the Jon Snow situation. But the timeline doesn't work out for it, unfortunately, because it says he's born in 287. And again, maybe, you know, these things aren't like 100% accurate, these things, because even if you want to go by, if it says it in A World of Ice and Fire, mm-hmm. let's see, where's it? Yeah, it's all calculations based upon what he said or anything. So you could make an argument, well, so maybe the calculations are off, maybe his description, you're viewing it through an unreliable narrator or anything. Like, to me, if anything, it makes more sense that Ned gets to Starfall, sleeps with Ashara Dane. Ashara Dane fakes her death, because we know that Septa L'Amour has
so you think L'Amour might be Ashara Dane?
If L'Amour is Ashara Dane, we know Tyrion describes her as like having stretch marks or a scar or something like that. I have to go back and look exactly what it is. But it
basically shows childbirth.
The indication that she's given birth to a child, that it makes more sense that he would actually be Ashara Dane's child, and it's his mother is, because his father is unknown, and we know that, you know, his mother we do know his mother's name, I believe. Look at the family tree. Oh no, we don't know. Just a Lord Dane.
No, we don't know. Wife.
Yeah, we don't know at all. Exactly.
Yeah, it's absurd. It's absurdly open ended.
So if anything, it makes more sense that he could actually be Ned's actual
bastard son.
Ned gets to Starfall, says, all right, well, I gotta say goodbye to Shara Dane, sleeps with her, and then like a year later she gives birth after she's faked her death, and that makes the whole situation that then does kind of go against the idea of, well, Ned is the most honorable person, he would never cheat on his wife, because that's like the whole deal, which
mm-hmm.
you know, then you're kind of double playing with the, well, Jon Snow thing.
It's really hard to piece it all together. I mean, there's also, I don't know what the timeline looks like. There's no way that it could be Brandon's kid, right?
No way.
Okay, I didn't think so. Just wanted to make sure.
He's from every indication is that, and like the calculations by fans and everything, you know, that he's younger than, he's like younger than Rob. So I'll read the calculation. This is from the wiki. So it says Edric Dane is estimated by Arya to be 10 or 12 in 299 AC. Edric admits that he is indeed 12 years old in 299 AC, which is in A Storm of Swords, or I guess this chapter. He says he's 12. That gives Edric the following options: turning 11 or 12 in 299, and John, I believe, is 16. So even if he were like a year younger, he should be, say, 15.
Yeah.
So, but it could be that he's, you know, I don't know. It could be that they told him the wrong age to cover the story up. I mean, it's one of those things where it's
now we're going down the rabbit hole.
There's nothing to completely indicate, right? All of these things. So
why would Ashara Dane need to leave? That's always been like why fake her death? I guess like I don't know.
That's where you go into the idea that it is this much bigger prophecy thing about, where that she knows about the Song of Ice and Fire, and maybe Ned doesn't, and Jon Snow and Rhaegar.
Yeah, I would need to see a good justification for her to be L'Amour, because like I've always liked that theory, but I've never been able to justify. I just need to look into it a little bit. It's been a while since I've done a big Ashara Dane dive.
Yeah.
Because isn't it Seastar is the other, or is that Quaithe? I think people think Quaithe might be Shira
Seastar was Blood Raven's paramour, so that she'd be like really old.
People were thinking that was Quaithe. I remember that.
Right.
So, maybe next episode we open up with a little bit of L'Amour speculation. That could be a lot of fun. I'm telling you, all this stuff, man, talking about Arya, talking about the prophecy with Sansa, where she's at the end of the series, and then this stuff, like, it just makes me want to read A Dance of Dragons so bad.
Well, yeah.
There's so much stuff that we haven't uncovered yet.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's one of those where you have to really put it together. But that it is still one of the biggest mysteries. And maybe George had it. And I think it's obvious where you look at later in the series that George has had a totally different plan for him.
Mm-hmm.
going forward. Yep. But he is one of the most intriguing characters, because even if you view it that way, like, why would somebody who's, why, you know, even 2 years later, or even a year later, right? If you get pregnant and you do the math and everything, would you really want to name your son
no.
after the person that in some regards caused your sister to no. commit suicide? No.
Salute Arthur Dayne. Like, I just don't.
It makes zero sense.
Yeah, I don't. There's something weird about all of this. I mean, I've also heard people say, you know, that Half-Hand is actually Arthur Dayne, and
right, you could also make
to be with him.
Right, you could also just make an argument that it's George playing with, because it's technically Edric, not Eddard. Right, it's Edric Dayne's, and then but he goes by Ned. Right, and maybe it's just a cruel, I don't know. Maybe it's just the way it works, and it's just George throwing us off in a different direction to hide a. other theory.
And it could be. It could be. Like, it's not exactly a one for one, but the fact that they call him Ned, and maybe the fandom, we're all just looking into it a little bit too much, and maybe it just is really Edric Dayne. But regardless, he does have a pretty big part to play, I think, going forward. I think it might end up being Sword of the Morning. So let's see.
It is really interesting where Edric Dayne is going to go forward, because clearly it does seem like George's plans for him have changed drastically.
And Dark Star was created of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dark Star's a whole nother thing.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, that might be it for us today. I think here we could certainly come back and talk about it with this stuff again anytime, but I'm running a little crunch for time, unfortunately, today. So
all good, man.
All good. So with that, guys, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 44, Jaime 6.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.podcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient. Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.